Welcome back to the Real Official Podcast. If you're new here, welcome. You found fishing-focused content that is mediocre yet mildly entertaining. We discuss fishing equipment, tips, tricks, tactics, and news. I'm your host, Joseph, and we're on episode number 6. And up front, this is going to be a long one. So if you're looking for something to listen to in the truck while you work, if you're looking for something to listen to while you work in an office, I've got you. This will take up at least, I'm going to say, an hour of your day. At least. We'll be scratching the surface of breaking down lakes and how we can fish them more effectively and eliminate what we call dead and low percentage water, because lakes are very large bodies of water usually. And even if they're not, even if it's just a 10 acre lake, I'm going to go out on a limb. Somebody might correct me. Who knows? 70% of that's probably going to be dead or low percentage water. Dead water is more like there's nothing there. Like there's no reason for a fish to be there. There's no reason for fish to hold there. Low percentage water is water that's going to be just travel water. So fish are going to use that area to travel from point A to B, which those can be effective, but we don't really want to touch those areas too much because the action is going to be very hit or missed. So the first thing we're going to cover is the water. And this is going to entail a number of different things, especially when we're talking about a lake. We're talking clarity, depth, the water temp, wind direction, inflows like creeks, rivers, man-made inflows like a culvert or rainwater discharges, you know, things like that. So clarity, lakes are always going to have, to me, I break it down into three different categories. We're going to have stained, which is, two. So we're going to have stained, which is going to be muddy, like after rain, high water, what have you. Naturally stained lakes are just lakes that keep a certain color year round. They don't really change color. They can be a dark, they can be a very bluish color. Good examples of this would be like the southern lakes, you know, like Caddo, Texarkana, I think. You know, a couple of those southern lakes, they usually have a darker color to them. And that's just because of the vegetation and stuff that's on the shores of that lake. So they're going to be a little bit darker. Whereas like in the northern areas, you know, like Lake St. Clair or even the Lake Great Lakes, you know, they're going to have a more of a deep blue type color. And again, it just goes with bottom topography and the stuff you have on the shoreline, trees, whatnot. So that's what we mean by water clarity, because that's going to dictate how we fish it. Next is depth. You know, we want to look for what kind of lake are we fishing? Are we fishing a shallow lake, such as a man-made impoundment, man-made reservoirs? Those are usually shallower lakes. And when I say a shallow lake, I don't mean, you know, you get 10, 11, 12 feet. A shallow lake, in my opinion, is any lake that's from, you know, of course, zero to around, I would say, 40 to 50 feet. Some people are like, that's not a shallow lake. Well, when you look at some of these lakes around, that is a shallow lake. There's some lakes, southern United States, all over the United States, that they can get down to 80, 90, 100, 110, 120 feet. You know, just like last year, there was a lake in, I believe it was the south or southern United States. I can't remember which lake it was, but they were fishing a catfish tournament. And the guy that won the tournament was catching all of his fish in 110 feet of water. Like, that was his method, and that's where he was finding them, and that's how he won it. So when I say shallow lake, that's what I mean, 0 to 40 feet, because there are many, many lakes that go over that 40-foot mark. And again, some of those lakes, well, not some of those, the deeper the lake, the more, the deeper the lake, your presentation will change. Your gear will change just because of how deep the lake is. But, you know, kind of moving on from that. So like a deep lake, that's going to be like natural spring-fed lakes. Those are lakes that they're man-made, but they're fed by an underground spring usually. I'm going to stick that in there, usually. Because I feel it coming now. Someone's going, well, that's not always true. Okay, fine, whatever. I'm just making a point. My own experience, my own research. Okay, no, agree to disagree. Also, you have river fed, but they're not river fed in the sense of like a little river. You know, I'm thinking more of like Kentucky Lake, which is, it's essentially a river that has been dammed up into a lake. And that lake has, that has some depth to it. So that's going to be a deep water lake. So that's something we want to be cognizant of when we're breaking down a lake, is the depth, because that's going to change how we fish. It's going to change where we fish. And it's just going to change our presentations, because a deeper lake, we're, of course, we're going to need, you know, a little bit heavier line, not too heavy. We're going to need a little bit heavier lead, a little bit different. We're going to be more cognizant of colors, because colors really, what's the words I'm looking for here? Colors at certain depths are not visible. And I mean, because basically the light is, yeah, that's it. So where the light gets down into the lake, that's how deep you're going to see certain colors. Like red, I think past like 25, 30 feet, something like that, red starts to be invisible because there's no, a lot of light's not getting that far down at times. So when you're getting real deep, you know, 80, 90, 100 feet, you know, baits that are a blue or black, those will actually stand out more because they're going to be more visible at those depths. So that's what I mean by we want to make sure what kind of lake we're fishing, because that's going to determine how we fish it, how we go about it, the structure we're going to look for, everything. The next is water temperature. And of course, I've touched on this in a few episodes prior to this, but water temperature does play a role in where you're going to find fish, because along with barometric pressure and a couple of other variables, water temp dictates where fish are going to be. You know, especially at the beginning of the year, like spring, even fall, those times of years, you're going to see the most movement from the fish, because if it's in the spring, the water's warming, you're going to see fish start moving up into their spring and eventually into their summer pattern. And during the fall, you're going to see those fish come up shallow, feed, and then you're going to, as the temperature drops and the lake temperature drops, you're going to see them move out to staging areas and winter holes. So the water temp is going to dictate where we're going to find those fish. And water temp is not really hard to find. There's a couple websites online that you can find water temperature. You know, I think I touched on it a couple episodes back. The USGS, I believe, is the site where you can check river levels in your area. They also have on there where you can see lakes, the pool they're at, temperature. And if you have a website that reports, like does weekly or monthly fishing reports, weekly fishing reports, it'll tell you the temperature of the lake and what's going on. Because a lot of those reports are coming from fishing guides. And those opinions I trust, because those are guys that are out there every day. That's their livelihood. So usually what they tell you is going to be accurate. Now, they ain't going to tell you everything because, of course, they have to make a living. But they will give you not vague information, but they'll give you information on what's going on, how the water temperature is, where fish are usually locating, what they're relating to. And after water temperature, it's going to be wind direction. Because whereas on ponds and, say, rivers or creeks, the wind direction on a lake is fairly important, because wind direction pushes bait and fish. So if you're fishing the calm side of the lake, which is where the wind is at your back usually, those areas are not going to be, usually, caveat, usually, they won't be as effective, or they won't have as much production as the windward side of the lake, or the late side of the lake, the wind is blowing in your face. And that's because the wind, depending on what lake you're at, it's going to push bait towards a certain side of the lake. Now, that's not all bait. I mean, there's going to be other areas that are not as affected by the wind. That's fine. Lakes, there's numerous ways to catch fish, but certain fish, certain bait gets pushed by the wind to certain areas of the lake. So like a good example is catfishing. Usually we want to fish on the side of the lake that the wind is blowing in our face, because that wind is going to push dead shad and other bait for catfish. It's going to push them into that bank that the wind is blowing into. And that brings the fish a lot closer to shore, therefore making it a little bit easier to catch them. So wind direction is something that you want to pay attention to on a lake, or the water aspect of the lake, because it will dictate where you can find fish. And like I said, caveats to all of this. Sometimes you will get fish other places. You will get bit. You will catch fish. I'm not saying you won't. I'm saying that the water that you might be fishing is probably a lower percentage than some of the water that we're going to go over, some of the cover, you know, things like that. So wind direction, like I said, the wind facing direction, wind in your face, that's going to be a higher percentage than a higher catch percentage or higher percentage of you catching fish than the side that has no wind at all, because those fish are going to be more spread out, less concentrated. Now, another thing we want to look at on lakes is inflows. So an inflow is anything that is bringing water into that reservoir. So creeks, rivers, touched on it before, man-made inflows, like you'll have culverts, rainwater discharges, you'll have, sometimes you'll have dams at the top of the lake that's releasing water into the lake. That's rare though. So, you know, inflows are a good place to fish, especially after a higher water event. So if we have, say, a week of rain and we're catfishing, I'll just say that, we're going to get more, or we're going to have a higher percentage of catching a fish by fishing these inflows like the creeks or the rivers, or again, the man-made inflows. Now, man-made inflows, especially culverts and rainwater discharges, are very good for largemouth bass, white bass, a number of the bass species. They love rainwater discharges, culverts, and that's just because it's pushing water through it and it's bringing bait with it. So there's other numerous fish besides the bass, but those are just two I can think of off the top of my head. You know, I've seen a couple of tournaments where the winner, or one tournament in particular, this was like 7-8 years ago. He won the entire tournament by fishing discharges or inflows. You know, he would fish a low head dam. He caught most of his limit. Then he would move to another. It was a rainwater discharge. I can't remember what lake it was, but he fished that low head dam that was bringing water into the lake, and he caught his limit, and he went to that discharge and culled his catch. For those that don't know what culled means, it means you take out your smallest fish for another fish that you've caught that's bigger than that fish. And it's all about upgrading your bag after you get your limit. And that's how a lot of those tournament anglers work, is they'll catch their main, like their five, and then fishing after that, they're targeting bigger fish in order to cull out smaller fish. That's most tournament anglers, that's their strategy. Let me get five in the box, and then the rest of the day, I'm going to cull out what I can, hopefully upgrading my bag to the point where I can cover, pretty much. I can get up on the leaderboard, and I can stay where I'm at. Next, we're looking at cover. So cover, there's a lot of different things for cover. You have natural cover, you have man-made cover. Man-made cover is like flooded roadbeds, boat docks, man-made submerged structures like they do it for crappie. They call them crappie condos, where it's a block of PVC pipes kind of in a tree-like pattern that they drop. Flooded structures, like some lakes in the United States, they flooded houses, farms, graveyards. They flooded all these things, creating some of these lakes. So that's man-made structure. When we're talking natural, we're talking rocks, timber, vegetation, and depth changes. So depth changes, you got drop-offs, like a river or creek channel, mid-lake humps, which are just parts of the lake bed have, like it can be 30 feet around it, but it comes up into like a mound or a hill underwater, essentially. So around it's 30 feet, and at the top of that hump is like 15 feet. Fish congregate to stuff like that. Rocks, we've touched on rocks a lot because rocks is a fish magnet. No matter where you're at, I guarantee if you fish nowhere else, if you find a rocky bank, a rock pile, a riffle area on a river, or just a big boulder in like a creek or somewhere, there's going to be a fish on it. Rock is something that holds fish all year long, depending on where it is, depth-wise, of course. But rocks hold fish year-round. So if you fish nothing else, rocks will be one of your higher percentage cover in the lake to actually catch something, because that's just something that fish relate to very easily, and it's readily available in a lot of lakes. Like a lake back home called El Dorado. That lake is a spring-fed rocky lake. Most of that lake is rock and gravel bottom. And in turn, it makes it a very good walleye lake. Me and my dad, we've fished it so many times. We've caught numerous walleyes anywhere from, 16, 17 inches all the way up to 22, 23-inch studs. It's a very good walleye lake because walleye like to relate to rocky shoreline. They like to relate to rocky bottoms, rock piles, things like that. And during the spawn, they like to relate to rock banks, which is just a riprap bank, has a bunch of rocks. And usually those rocks are there to avoid erosion of the shoreline. And those are going to be areas that are hit with wind a lot throughout the year. So like if you see a portion of the lake has like some rocky shoreline, that riprap, or they have a cement wall on that side of the lake, those are usually areas of that lake that get pounded with wind more often than not during the year. So those areas will have fish. And usually, I'm not going to say usually, but sometimes those areas can also be overfished because, like I said, those are very easy places to find in most lakes. Very easy places to fish most lakes. Now, a rocky or a rock structure that's harder to fish is a rock pile. And I say that because rock piles we're generally talking about areas out in the lake where a pile of rocks has either been dumped there or over time they just kind of piled up together, what have you, because of the lake current, whatnot. Those are a little bit harder for most people to fish unless you have some kind of electronics that tells you where it's at. Sometimes you'll go right over it. This isn't about rocky structure, but just kind of a little funny story about structure that you'll miss completely. Here in Texas, we have a lake called Grapevine Lake, I believe. Yeah, it's Grapevine Lake. And in the north end of the lake, or on the north side of the lake, I'm not 100% sure where it's at, but someone posted on the Facebook group that they were trolling along, or they were just idling along. And usually when fishermen say they're idling, they're using their electronics to look for certain areas that hold fish, kind of like what we were just mentioning with rock piles and timber, stuff like that. So he was idling along, and all of a sudden he came upon this area, and he sees, it's a rock crusher, I believe it is what it is. Because when a rock crusher and a dump truck are flooded there, and you'd never know they were there unless you had the electronics to see it. And the story goes that they used to do some kind of quarry mining there, I guess. And when the lake was built, whomever had that equipment there never came and got it. So when the lake flooded, they flooded that right along with it. And now people fish it. Like, it's kind of a crazy, well, not crazy, it's kind of a unique story. I thought I'd just throw in there, speaking of electronics. The next, after the rocks, we're going to look at timber. You know, timber is a fish magnet as well. And there are usually a few different, I'm not going to say types. They're all kind of the same thing, but they all have their own unique quality, I guess. So you have standing timber. You have, that's timber that you see out of the water. Like if you drive by a lake and you go by an area and you see trees standing out of the water, that's what people usually refer to as standing timber. Now, you also have certain areas of the lake that when they refer to timber, you know, it could be like flooded tree stumps. That's just in that area. Like you don't see the trees anymore, but underneath the water, you have numerous stumps that are now below the water level. And those are very good areas to fish, especially for bass. Those are very good bass areas and catfish areas. So that's something, it's one of those ones that if you don't have electronics, you won't find it unless you are one of those people like myself. You'll go look at Garmin.com. They have a chart viewer where you can look at lakes and look at their bottom composition, and they'll have it labeled on there, like flooded timber or roadbed or rock pile, or, you know, they'll have that kind of stuff labeled. The next is just fallen timber in general. And that's timber or trees or anything that's fallen over into the lake. You know, it's usually shoreline, or sometimes you can have trees that have been flooded out in the main lake that have just, you know, been fallen, I guess is what you'll say. Or you'll have timber that's been purposely like wired together and dropped in specific areas on the lake. And that could be man-made structure as well, but it's fallen timber either way. The next is vegetation, which kind of coincides with timber usually. Well, not usually. What I mean is you have timber and vegetation. You know, it's both biological plant life that has some kind of relevance to the fish. Like I said, the standing timber, all that was vegetation at one point. It was trees. So anyways, let's not go down. I'll stop. So vegetation, you have three different kinds on the lake. Usually you have emergent, submergent, and floating. So emergent is a piece of vegetation that grows in shallow water with the roots under the water, but it's sticking out. So like cattails, that's a good one. Or any of those, I can't think of it. But cattails is a good example of emergent, because that's just saying that the roots are under the water, but the plant itself is usually out of the water, sticking out of the water. And there's usually a lot of it in one area. You have submergent, which it grows entirely underwater, and it comes up to the water surface. So like milfoil and pondweed are two good examples. You know, it'll grow, it'll take up roots, it'll grow. And then when it gets to the water surface, it'll lay over or it'll stop growing. That's a good example of submergent. Now, sometimes not all submergent comes all the way up to the water surface. Some of it stays, you know, some feet below the water. And those are good spots, especially for bass fishing. Bass love submergent vegetation, especially during summer months, because it gives them a nice cool place to sit. And they're just going to wait for something to swim above them, above that vegetation line, to ambush and eat. And then we have floating, which is vegetation that grows and it's not attached or rooted. So that'll be like lily pads. Now, usually when they grow, they're not usually rooted. Now, if I'm not mistaken, there are certain types of lily pads that are rooted to the floor, to the ocean floor, not ocean floor, my goodness, to the lake bottom. But that is a good example of floating vegetation. It, like I said, it grows unattached or rooted, and it's floating leaves. So that's stuff that you see on lakes that are that have a lot of vegetation. You'll see it has a lot of float, like it'll be like floating weeds and stuff like that. And it kind of moves with the lake as the wind shifts, it'll shift around the lake. That's what floating vegetation is. And then we have depth changes. So depth changes, I kind of discussed it a little bit earlier. You know, you have drop-offs, which are just areas in the lakes that go from a certain depth to another depth. So examples, like you go from 12 feet down to 20 feet. It's like a nice drop-off. It's not, and it's, sometimes it's not like a straight drop-off. It's just a quicker descent into depth. So it's kind of like when you look at a mountain, you'll see some parts of the mountain where the growth slope is more gradual. And then you'll have some spots where it's just like almost vertical, or it's, you know, 180 degrees going up, and, you know, things like that. Those are what we refer to as drop-offs. And drop-offs kind of coincide with the next depth change, which are river and creek channels. So before most of the lakes that you'll find in the United States, most of the lakes prior to being made were rivers or creeks. They were some kind of natural water flow that was dammed up to create the lake. So that depth change, or those creeks and river channels, will still be there after the lake is flooded. And that's one of those structures that you really don't find unless you have, say, electronics that can kind of point you in the right direction, or if you check the chart view, or you just know where it's at. You know, that's one of those, a little bit more difficult pieces of cover to find. And then we explained it later, the mid-lake hump is just a hill underwater, essentially. And now we have man-made structure. Man-made structure is man-made structure is good to fish, because usually that man-made structure is probably better than most of the other structure and cover in that area. So like roadbeds, you know, some of these lakes that were before they were made, sometimes they had roads going around that area because it was farmland or what have you. Those are, some of them are depth changes. So you'll have around that roadbed will be 10 feet. Then the roadbed comes up to like 8 feet or something like that. That's a good piece of structure. Boat docks, I mean, there's really not much to say about boat docks. Everybody fishes boat docks. Everybody fishes, you know, I mean, everybody fishes boat docks. Whether it be a crappie house that you're fishing at or a boat dock at a random lake, boat docks are very good fish attractants. And most of the time it's for the fish to get out of, you know, get out of the sun, because those spaces underneath are usually cooler than the lake around it. And they're very good fish attractants, especially some boat docks, because people like hang like little Christmas trees underneath them and things like that, that make it a little more accommodating to fish, I guess you could say. Those are good pieces of structure to fish, especially if you don't have, say, electronics. Like if you're in a kayak, you don't have electronics, fishing boat docks is probably a good bet. You know, depending on what you're fishing for, usually boat docks you'll find more like crappie and bluegill or a largemouth. You will find some catfish underneath boat docks, but most of the time you're going to find largemouth and crappies and little sunfish, stuff like that. Another man-made structure, like I touched on a little while ago, is they're just man-made structures that are dumped into the lake. Whether that be the PVC pipe trees that are made usually for crappie, Or they're like a bundle of Christmas trees, because there's some places that you donate your Christmas tree to the Department of Wildlife, and they'll use those as habitat for fish throughout the state or wherever or whatever region you're in. You know, that's what I mean by man-made submerged structure. That stuff, it's usually not hard to find, because usually when a state or the Department of Wildlife sets that stuff or puts it in the lake, they usually mark it, and then it's much easier to find for anglers, because they put it in there for anglers to fish and to attract fish to make fishing more enjoyable for, you know, for certain patrons that may not be as inclined. Well, not inclined. That's not really what I mean. They may not be as familiar. There you go. They may not be as familiar with fishing as others. And lastly, we're going to touch on flooded structures. So flooded structures are like houses, or like I said earlier in my little story, old pieces of heavy duty equipment, you know, stuff like that. That's flooded structures. A lot of these lakes, oh, I won't say a lot, but a good number of lakes in the United States, when they were made, they displaced either people or farmers, or they displaced something, because most of these places, somebody lived, somebody was, you know, had their land, and of course the government bought the land from them, but some cases they bought the land from them. But I'm not going to go into that. That's a history lesson. Most of them had some kind of structures on those lands. And so you'll have, like, nowadays you might not have like a completely submerged like homestead or something, but you'll have like remnants of it, or you'll have a like foundations of old structures. There's a lake back home, El Dorado. Again, there was a spot on the north side of the lake, I believe. Yeah, the north side of the lake. And there was a homestead. And I remember me and my dad, we used to wade that area for white bass in the spring. And he would always tell me to be careful, because on that property, there's a well. And it would be very easy to fall into that well and go from, you know, 4 feet of water. And that well, I think, is like 100 feet deep, something like that. So it'd be very easy to fall into that. And at the time, I wasn't a strong swimmer. So that's what I mean by flooded structures. They're out there. They're not going to be as prevalent. You know, there's some lakes that have a lot of flooded structures, like Lake of the Ozarks, I know, is one of them. They have a lot of flooded structures there, flooded cemeteries. Lake of the Ozarks flooded a lot of different areas. So that's something to keep in mind when you're fishing these areas. It's flooded structures. That's always something to keep an eye out, especially if you have down imaging, side imaging, or just any electronics in general. You can see those structures on electronics, and they're always worth fishing. Now, it depends what kind of structure and where you're fishing, what's going to hold on that structure. But it's a good starting point. And lastly, actually, this episode is not as long as I thought it was going to be. We have baits and presentations. So, of course, when it comes to lakes, we want to look at three different things. As I said before, the depth dictates your presentation. So we have certain presentations that are very good for shallow water. We have presentations that are very good for deep water. We want to look at the fishing pressure. How much pressure does it look like this lake gets? So if you're out there on the lake and you see a bunch of party boaters, a bunch of fishermen, that's a pressured lake. So you're going to want to switch up your presentation to something that's probably not as widely used, or just something that's a little bit different. So that's one thing that you can do when you're looking for baits and presentations on a lake. Also, forage. Forage is the most important thing when you're fishing a lake. So you'll have lakes, they'll have shad, crayfish, frogs, reptiles, snakes and lizards. Yes, snakes and lizards are forage. Especially for largemouth bass, they have they have a tendency to eat a lot of things that are swimming on the surface. And a good story that I have for that is me and my dad, we were fishing a place in Kansas called the Walnut River. And me and my dad, he kind of taught me to have eagle eyes when it comes to snakes. Because snakes will ruin your day fishing. They will. So we're fishing, and all of a sudden we see a snake, like, maybe 20 yards down the bank to our right. He gets in the water. He's going across the river. And, of course, the river has current, so, you know, he's kind of going more of an angle because of the current. And he's swimming. He gets about three-quarters of the way there, and then we just basically see I'm not going to say a cavern, but we see something come up and just swipe it off the surface. Now, that probably wasn't a largemouth bass. More than likely, that was probably a catfish, a flathead catfish. They are known to do that. Catfish, flathead catfish, especially when they're in a feeding state, they're in shallow water. And trust me, they will suck snakes off the surface, ducks, you know, because once flatheads get to a certain size, everything is game. That's one of the reasons I don't want to do the whole noodling thing, because if you look hard enough and you look at video like on YouTube and stuff like that, you'll hear some stories. There's some big flatheads out there. You know, one story in particular I know of from Oklahoma. He was saying that one time he stuck his arm in a old cement culvert, like you would see them putting into roadways and stuff. He stuck his arm in there and he touched a fish all the way down till he felt his mouth. And when he stuck his arm in his mouth, his arm went all the way up to his shoulder. And the fish clamped on and he couldn't move. Like, the guy was stuck barely underwater. He could almost get his nose and mouth above the water, but he couldn't quite because the fish had his entire right arm in his mouth. And he had clamped down right around that upper shoulder, like the upper part of his arm where it connects to the shoulder. The fish had bit down. He's just sitting there because that's his turf. And basically you went to his turf. And a flathead of that size, he's going to probably run 80, 90, 100 pounds. And yeah, you might be strong, but 100-pound flathead underwater, you can be a 300-pound dude. You ain't got a chance because that's his turf and that's a big fish. But the only reason that guy lived was because because of his friend being there to pull him out and actually save his life. All that to say, flatheads, when they get to a certain size, they eat everything. But anyways, let's reel it back in, get back to the forage. So the reptiles, like I said, snakes, lizards, etc., because those are prey animals to certain fish once they get to a certain size. And it's not just catfish. Bass are notorious for eating little reptiles like snakes and lizards off the surface. Pikes, the wolf of freshwater, as they call it, they're notorious for eating anything on the water surface. You know, like ducklings, lizards, snakes, birds. You know, if it's on the water surface and they're bigger than it, they're going to try to eat it. And then freshwater crustaceans. Freshwater crustaceans are like, you know, mussels. So not clams, really. I mean, they do have freshwater clams, or like some areas here, we have zebra mussels. It's invasive and they're not really wanted, but fish do eat it. Like back home, I'm giving a lot of stories today just because I have quite a few of them. Like I might do an episode one day where I just do story time with Joseph. That's a good title. I might do it. But back home in El Dorado, they have a zebra mussel problem. And this was about 15 years ago. They found zebra mussels in the lake. And they stocked blue catfish in the lake because that's a food that they eat. And the article is on the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks. You can probably still find it, but it's like a 15-year-old article, but it's good information. Because the biologists, they even said that when we put the blue catfish in there, our primary goal was for them to eat the zebra mussels to kind of keep it in balance and, you know, to kind of keep the lake from just being completely hindered by the zebra mussel. Because how those mussels work is they're filter feeders. So when they filter the water, they're taking away nutrition for smaller fish that are essentially bait fish to larger fish. So it kind of throws off the entire balance. But freshwater crustaceans, they are a bait. Now, there's not a lot of baits that actually mimic that. I just thought I'd throw it in there because you can find fish on those areas. Like if it's a clam bed or something, or you have like a bed of zebra mussels out there, you'll probably find fish on that bed of zebra mussels or whatever mussels they are, just because those zebra mussels or whatever mussels they are, they'll attract other little fish to that area. So in turn, it makes it kind of a catch 22. Like they're not good for the water, but they will in turn hold fish from time to time. So freshwater crustaceans is also a bait that you not really mimic, but you want to target those areas because they will draw fish. And like I touched on before, shad, that's another one that most lakes are going to have shad. And then if the lake doesn't have shad, it'll usually have a population of sunfish, bluegills, stuff like that. So you want to mimic those forages, because when you mimic the forage, you're more likely to get bit just because it looks natural. It's not like ponds where I touched on week before last, where you want to kind of go outlandish. Like with bigger lakes, getting the right forage is probably the better idea, just because sometimes it might do the opposite in a lake than it does in a pond. That outlandish color might actually make fish not bite it at all. Crayfish is another presentation that a lot of people use, and especially for bass, you know, largemouth bass, there's a lot of colors in bass fishing that mimic crayfish. You know, you have tubes that mimic the crayfish. You have crankbaits that are a crayfish color, and they're deep divers, and when they deep dive, that bill of the crankbait digs into the bottom of the lake and stirs up silt as it's going along, and it looks like a crayfish running away. So that will trigger strikes. Or you'll have an actual crayfish imitation plastic. Those are all good baits. And like I said, those are usually bass. Now, crayfish, they will work for catfish. Like if you get a whole crayfish and you use that as bait, especially if you get it under a float or you fish it near like rock, like the riprap bank, stuff like that. You know, catfish love it. They love crayfish. Frogs is another one. Frogs is an all good all around bait. Honestly, frogs are very prevalent in bass fishing. You got a lot of frog imitations. And they're very good for areas with a lot of vegetation. Like I touched on before, the floating vegetation like lily pads and other types of vegetation that float on the top of the water or submergent that has grown all the way to the water surface. Frogs are very good for those areas because they mimic a frog going across the vegetation. And bass will eat it. I mean, there's been so many times I've gone fishing and I've been skunked on everything else but a topwater frog near vegetation. I mean, the frog is a very good bait. Now, coincidentally, frogs are very good for catfish as well. Like up in Canada on the Red River, which is probably the channel catfish capital of the world. Their average channel catfish size, I touched on this way back in one of my other podcast episodes. You know, they generally are 1 to 10 pounds. The average weight, I believe, on the Red River in, I think it's Manitoba, the average weight is around 10 pounds. That's average. And there has been numerous channel catfish in that river caught that are pushing 20 pounds, 25 pounds. And a technique that guys use up there is a float with a leopard frog. And for some reason, those catfish up there, just it's like candy to them. Whereas down here, we like to use shad and skipjack. Up there, their primary bait they use is frogs. And it works. I mean, the catfish up there kind of prove the fact that it works. So that's kind of what we look at when we're looking at forage in a lake. We want to make sure that we know what's in the lake so we can mimic that. And when we mimic those things, especially when we mimic them well, it's very hard to not get bit if you're fishing in the right spot, which is kind of rolls into the fishing pressure. You know, the better you are at mimicking the main forage of the lake and not looking very artificial, I guess is the word I'll use, those will be a lot better fishing days for you. Like swim baits and pressured areas, swim baits are great. Especially if you can get some of the very realistic baits, like Live Target makes a very good realistic shad. Or areas like big swim baits will work. Like areas of California and here in Texas, they'll have trout-colored swim baits that are very good for big bass. So when it comes to fishing pressure, we just want to make sure that we're mimicking our baits. We're doing good presentations because fishing pressure will cause fish to be more wary. And the more realistic and the more realistic it looks and the more closely it resembles the natural forage in that lake, the more likely you are to get bit. And then last, but definitely not least, is your depth. I kind of mentioned it. Well, not kind of. I did mention it earlier. Depth will dictate your presentation. So again, shallow water presentations is going to vary. Because like for me, shallow water really depends on the lake. Whether, what kind of shallow water presentation we're talking about. So a lake that has a lot of vegetation, it's, you know, a shallower lake like 1 to 12 feet, you know, lakes like that, which more of a, I'd say more of a pond when it's like that, when it's that small, but the shallow water presentations are going to work better because the fish are going to be, I don't want to misspeak, but shallow water presentations work better in those kind of lakes just because they see more, that's what I'm trying to say. They see more shallow water forage, like the reptiles, like the snakes and lizards and the frogs and stuff like that. So like a lake that has a lot of lily pads, a frog, very good presentation, a buzz bait or a wake bait or shallow diving crankbait or a lipless crankbait, more shallow water presentations. Now, lipless crankbait can be used in deep water. We'll get into that in a second. But shallow water presentations or the lake depth will dictate what you want to do as far as your presentation. And that goes for whether you're bass fishing, cat fishing, or any kind of fishing. It's going to dictate your presentation. Like crappie, deep lake, you're probably going to do more jigging, like vertical jigging. And a shallower lake, you might do more of a jig and float combination, stuff like that. Or catfishing, you might do more floats, or you might do lighter lead. You know, something that fits shallow water better. Now, if we're in deep water, that does change things because it changes the weights in your tackle that you're going to use. So like a very good deep water presentation fish that I can think of is the walleye. Now, usually, like I said, some people might disagree. That's fine. Most of this is my own opinion, stuff that I've learned over the 25 years I've been doing this. Like walleye, when they're in deep water, which we found walleyes in deep water a lot back home. So our presentation would change when they were up shallow, like on the dam spawning, you know, little crankbaits, little swim baits, little curly tails, stuff like that were very good shallow water presentations. But when they're in deep water, a bigger jig head, you know, instead of like shallow water, you're going to go like a quarter, not a quarter ounce. You're going to go like 1/8 to 1/16, you know, smaller. Because you're in shallow water, you don't need to drop as fast. Whereas if I'm fishing in 40 feet of water, using a 3/4 ounce, 1/2 ounce, even sometimes an ounce jig head to get it down that 40 feet is going to be the option. So that's what I mean, is the depth, water depth is going to change our presentation and how we fish for these fish. So like bass, because we touched walleye, now bass, like Carolina rig is going to be very good for deep water. You know, put on a half ounce sinker, cast it, and you're going to be able to fish those rock piles and stuff that are a little bit deeper water. You know, a drop shot or even a tube jig, something. Those are better deep water presentations. So we want to pay attention to our depth, because that is going to dictate how we fish it. And it might not dictate it a lot, but we want to be prepared for all situations. So if you're fishing a deep water lake, of course, bring your shallow water presentations, because that lake's not going to go from 0 to 80 feet right off the side of the bank. You're going to have shallow water, but you want to make sure you have the deep water presentations if the fish are not in shallow water. Like as the sun comes up, you know, they might be shallow in the morning, but as that sun comes up and it gets higher in the sky, you know, around noon, those fish are going to go back into deeper water. You know, it all just dictates. So the depth will dictate your presentation. Make sure you are prepared for whatever depth you're fishing the lake. Make sure you do your research. And I mean, doing research isn't really that hard. You really just want to check, like most of our Department of Wildlife's for states on the state level, most of them have sections of their site that go over like some of the lakes in your area. And they'll tell you the depth, tell you what kind of fish is in there, like the Texas Department of Wildlife and Parks. I love their website, because if I have never fished a lake before, I can go on there and I can see the average depth of that lake. I can see what fish are in that lake. I can see how they rate the lake as far as if it's poor, good, excellent, or good, great, or excellent as far as a fish species is concerned. So it has really good information, and that's what we want to do before we even pack a rod into our truck or car, whatever you have, or we rig it up. We want to make sure we know what we're fishing for on these lakes, what we're looking at. And again, use like the Garmin chart viewer. Go look at the lake, see little areas that you might want to fish. See if there are submerged structures, if there's flooded timber, you know, something. Just take a look. And do that planning and research beforehand, because that'll make your fishing experience a lot better, especially when you're fishing lakes. But I think that's it. This has been a little bit of a longer episode. Not my longest episode, but it's been a long one. So we're going to go ahead and get closed out here. If you enjoyed this episode and you haven't done this already, please subscribe to our podcast and turn on all notifications. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and all major podcast platforms. Don't forget to share this with your friends, your family, and that random guy who hovers around the water cooler at work. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We're out.